question that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're dads on the air.
And it's welcome back. This is Bill Cable from Dads on the Air, and it's a big welcome back to all our listeners, both who were getting us on 2GLF and those who are listening online. So 2 years later, here we are on Community Radio Network doing the show in the state-of-the-art studios of Fine Music 102.5. The big issues are still there for us to explore and to ask the questions that you won't hear anywhere else. Today, our special guest is Professor Charles Arini, who is the Pro-Dean, the Associate Dean of Research and Professor in Management at the Macquarie Graduate School of Management at Macquarie University. Professor Arini has a PhD from the University of Florida, and his personal history is that he married in 2000, he had a son in 2000, and then a daughter in 2004. Then there was a separation in 2007, and he was one of the lucky ones. He had 50% shared parenting as a single father for 5 years. And as a result of this experience, he's now written an excellent book called The Other Glass Ceiling, Fathers Stepping Up, Mothers Letting Go. Charles, good morning.
Good morning.
Charles, this book covers a lot of topics. I'm sure that there's plenty of room for pub arguments with some of the issues you raise. But it starts off with that in an interesting way, in the fact that it's written by two people speaking with one voice. So I was just wondering how you came to that arrangement.
Well, very simply, we did a lot of the writing on our own. So Stephen Alden is my co-author, and we did a lot of writing on our own. And we thought about the identity of the actors being discussed and how we wanted to communicate. And we said, look, if we communicate in a singular voice, then privacy, anonymity of all of the characters in the book would be preserved, and it would allow us to write as individuals as we think. You tend to think of yourself as I, me, when you're telling your own stories. And so we just decided, hey, let's keep it that way instead of converting everything, and just tell the reader up front that that's how we've approached it.
So it's based on the experiences of both of you. Is that correct?
And that's right. And they're combined in ways that make it seamless for the reader. So the reader doesn't really know which single father they're reading about as we go from one passage to the next or from one section to the next.
Yes, and what is the overall theme? Perhaps you could just describe to us what the other glass ceiling means.
Yeah. So the glass ceiling is the more familiar term, and it refers to the fact that women are underrepresented in leadership positions in the C-suite or the executive seat of the corporate world, in top-ranking government positions in the public world. And the other glass ceiling refers to the fact that women do a disproportionate amount of domestic labor in that little organization that we call the family household, and that this is particularly the case when young children are involved in the family. This is where the disparity between how much a father contributes to domestic home life and how much a mother contributes really widens. That's what the research shows. And what we were trying to convey is that there's a connection between the two ceilings, if you like, and that what we need is greater input from fathers in the domestic domain, particularly as it relates to child care, because once you even out the contribution of domestic labor in the typical family household, you're freeing women up to pursue their careers. So the book really calls for balance between mothers and fathers, both in the domestic sphere of the family household and in the corporate world.
Yes, I think you summed it up very well in one part of the book where you said that mums have too many roles and dads have too few roles.
Yep, I'd say that is a very nice way of characterizing the central message of the book, that women, particularly mothers with either a preschool or primary school. The research says that once high school rolls around, the children become independent enough, and I know, I've got a teenager, that things begin evening out. But that a mother's lifestyle is a juggling lifestyle, where she's got so many responsibilities, particularly if she's trying to pursue her way up to the top of the ladder of career success. And the father basically has more leisure time, and is sitting around almost single-mindedly pursuing his career because he doesn't perceive, rightly or wrongly, that there are other roles or other responsibilities that he can play inside the family home.
Charles, we might just take a short break here, and we'll be back in a moment with hearing more about The Other Glass Ceiling, the new book by Charles Arini and Stephen Holden.
Moonlight and roses are the going thing. Champagne, a little love and a wedding ring. But every time she leaves, it's gonna break your heart. It's happened before, don't come to me, I don't want no part.
And that was Brian Cadd singing Let Go. Very appropriate song, I think, for our guest today, Professor Charles Arini, with his new book, The Other Glass Ceiling, about fathers stepping up, mothers letting go. So there you are, mothers. Let go, as Brian Cadd tells you. Charles, perhaps we are looking at a whole change in society to deal with the issues that you've raised in this book. I mean, it's not unusual, for instance, as you pointed out in the book, for someone to ask a father, "Are you babysitting the kids?" When these are their own kids.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you think of the use of the term babysitter and what it implies. A babysitter is a temporary childcare employee, right, of the family home. Well, surely fathers have got to be more than a temporary employee. They're the other parent. They're the other 50% of where that child came from. So even the use of the language reinforces at an implicit level, you know, societal norms. I mean, men have traditionally, if you go throughout the 20th century, defined their role in the family as the breadwinner. I go out of the home to work as many hours as I need to work to provide enough income for my other family members to live lives accordingly. If I do that, I am, quote, a good father, unquote. And in the 21st century, that doesn't work anymore because women now are pursuing career success. They have direct access to economic resources. And effectively, the message to men, or the deal being offered to men, is you've got to contribute in these other areas because I have my own career. I have my own income. You can't just bring home the bacon and say you've done a good job. That's not good enough for dads anymore.
So, Charles, does this come down to, in fact, different parenting styles between the parents?
Well, I mean, I think in talking about fathers getting more involved in domestic life, look, the notion of the male breadwinner and the female homemaker has a long track record, okay? So the idea that, you know, he'll go to work and earn the money and she'll stay at home, that model has worked for a long time, and it may continue to work for certain couples who have those desires, who either implicitly or explicitly negotiate that that's the way they're going to run the family household. We're not saying there's anything wrong with that. We're not saying that approach is destined to fail. We're simply saying that it won't be the norm for the typical family household in the 21st century, that as women pursue careers and demand to break through the original class ceiling to make it to the top, there's only so many hours in the day. And so men are going to pick up and have a more balanced role in the family household in more family households. Not everyone. We're not saying that this is definitely going to be the new model for everybody, but you're going to see that more and more frequently.
Yes, that historical model you referred to, perhaps in times gone by, it was a way of avoiding starvation, to really have one person out providing, the other one doing the homework, the home duties, which tended to be the woman, whereas the man was out there killing the mammoths.
Yeah, and there have been, in fact, a Nobel Prize winner in economics has talked about role specialization having certain efficiencies, right? And so you could argue that, well, it's more efficient to have one parent go out and earn the money and the other parent to stay in the household and run everything in the family domicile, because as you specialize in roles, you get better at it. You know, you move down the learning curve faster, and that kind of message is out there in the world. But a lot of it had to do with the Industrial Revolution. I mean, we think of the idea of going to work as being normal. But in fact, when economies were based much more on agrarian kinds of outputs, farms, family farms, cooperative farms, you didn't go to work at all. You were just doing a different thing in some location in the family domicile. And, you know, the man might be in one place and the woman might be in another place. It was really the industrialization that brought into place specialized facilities for production, factories, if you like, that created this whole notion of going to work. And invariably, it was the men that went to work because you had all sorts of sexist myths suggesting that women were, you know, too frail for that rough and tumble world of going to work in the factory. And so that's where this whole division sort of originates. And it continued when we moved to economies based on professional services, because you needed office buildings, because much communication was face-to-face. So So you needed a lot of people in one place in order to have flows of communication that were necessary for business. Well, that's not really the case in the 21st century. A lot of businesses are small businesses, startup businesses. Even if you have a big corporation, we have substitute forms of communication, you know, email, Skyping, you know, Google Hangouts, teleconferencing. So that the idea that you need a lot of people in one office building in order to get work done is becoming less and less relevant. And which is good, because that lends itself to greater flexibility about when each parent works and where they work, and that should facilitate this idea of moving towards a more balanced existence.
Charles, we might have a short musical break now, and I hope that you and all our listeners have a sense of humour when you listen to the words of this song. So let's go with this one.
My life is changing in so many ways. I don't know who to trust anymore. There's a shadow running through my days, like a beggar going from door to door. I was thinking that maybe I'd get a maid, find a place nearby for her to stay. Just someone to keep my house clean, fix my meals and go away. A maid. A man needs a maid. A
And that was Neil Young singing A Man Needs a Maid. Probably not appropriate in view of our song today about men stepping up and women letting go. Charles, you get into even more controversial material when you talk about paternity and the recommendation for DNA testing at birth. Do you expect to, or have you had much opposition to that prospect?
Oh, I've had opposition to lots of lots of parts of the book, not just that part. I suppose that chapter is particularly controversial because we talk about the point we make there, the essential point, is that the marginalization of fatherhood relative to motherhood really starts even before the baby is born. The way we talk about, and we sort of make fun of that idea because the name of the chapter is We're Pregnant, and then in parentheses, sees, no, I'm not, because the father quickly finds out that, hold on, I'm not an equal partner in this at all by the way I'm being treated. And it really starts from, we talk about hospitals not even bothering to get the so-called father's name on the birth certificate, you know, doing that after the fact. It's not as important. The idea that women are encouraged to breastfeed, which is great, healthy for the baby, lots of benefits, but what is father's role in that whole process, or what will fathers do? One of the things we suggest is that let dad be there for as much of the breastfeeding as possible, and let him be the burp person at the end. You know, you put baby over the shoulder with the towel and burp, because you're going to get a little vomit on your back if you don't have the towel there, and at least get dad involved, because that simple notion that a woman might take 6 months off away from work after the birth of a child, and the father goes to work thinking, geez, I have another mouth to feed, I better work even harder and pursue that promotion even more. That subtle difference in that six-month period is the beginning of a trajectory of which parent will be involved in which area that leads ultimately to a disadvantage for the mother in pursuing her career. And it starts from the very beginning. And so we're simply trying to make people aware of the fact that the disadvantages or the marginalization of fatherhood can start very early on in terms of how society defines the father's role versus the mother's role.
Yes, and an interesting statistic you point out just you know, about the father, that you say that it's estimated between 3% and 5% of the population the husband is not the father.
Mm-hmm.
So that's you know, you're talking about 1 in 20 of the children, the husband's not the father.
There are actually different studies that give different estimates. I think one put the number as high as 10%, but we looked at all of the studies and they looked at all the methodologies and said, you know, this is probably a conservative but fair estimate of the percentage. And it is very interesting. I mean, one of the ideas that we say is it's interesting that it's the patriarchy that defines family history. It's the father, how we track things, and we say that was always going to lead to inaccuracies. We would have been much better off if everybody took the mother's last name and we followed the matriarchy as a way of organizing family history, because then we'd be 100% accurate.
Yes, I think I'm a bit late for that. But look, we're running out of time, unfortunately, Charles. It's such a fascinating topic. We could talk for a long time. But I know you've got a blog site where you want people to comment.
That's right. Just Google The Other Glass Ceiling, and we come up first, and we're continually updating things, not necessarily things that are in this book, although another book is in theory in progress, and that's updated on a monthly basis. So yeah, just Google The Other Glass Ceiling, and our book blog site is the first site that appears.
Well, look, that's great. As I say, the book is called The Other Glass Ceiling, Fathers Stepping Up, Mothers Letting Go, by Charles Arini and Stephen Holden. It's available out. It's in all good bookshops now, published by Darlington Press. And so, Charles...
And Amazon. They can get it on Amazon.
On Amazon?
Sorry.
Yes.
Shameless plug. Sorry.
No, that's great. People want to know where they can get it. So, look, thank you very much for joining us this morning, and best of luck with your work in this area. We're looking forward to the next book.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, thanks, Charles.
Bye-bye.
And Charles Arini has chosen a song today that really needs no introduction in view of our topic. It's called Cats in the Cradle by Harry Chapin.
A child arrived just the other day. He came to the world in the usual way, but there were planes to catch and bills to pay. He learned to walk while I was away, and he was talking for I knew it, and as he grew, he'd say, I'm gonna be like you, Dad, you know I'm gonna be like you. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know when, but we'll get together then, you know we'll have a good time then. My son turned 10 just the other day. He said, thanks for the ball, Dad. Come on, let's play. Can you teach me to throw? I said, not today, I got a lot to do. He said, that's okay. And he walked away, but his smile never dimmed and said, I'm gonna be like him. Yeah, you know I'm gonna be like him. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time then. Well, he came from college just the other day, so much like a man, I just had to say, son, I'm proud of you, can you sit for a while? He shook his head and he said with a smile, what I'd really like, Dad, is to borrow the car keys. See you later, can I have them, please? And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, son, I don't know when, but we'll get together then, Dad. You know we'll have a good time then. I've long since retired, my son's moved away. I called him up just the other day. I said, I'd like to see you if you don't mind. He said, I'd love to, Dad, if I can find the time. You see, my new job's a hassle and the kids are the flu, but it's sure nice talking to you, Dad. It's been sure nice talking to you. And as I hung up the phone, it occurred to me he'd grown up just like me. My boy was just like me. Silver spoon, little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, son, I don't know when, but we'll get together then, Dad. We're gonna have a good time then.
And that's our show for today. Thanks to everyone for listening. Don't forget you can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, and you'll find that we have a couple of books to give away. So go to our website, get in touch with us, tell us where you heard the show, and you might be a lucky winner of The Other Glass Ceiling, which is a topic of our conversation today. You can also hear this show again. You can go to any of our past shows. And in the meantime, we look forward to seeing you again next week for Dad's on the Air.